Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here at Fenway Park on a Chamber of Commerce Day, as we said earlier, this is part of our owners series. Last week, we talked with Steve Pagliuca, one of the owners of the Boston Celtics. We talked with Jeremy Jacobs, one of the owners, or the owner of the Boston Bruins. Tomorrow, we'll be at Gillette Stadium. Bob Kraft will be our guest and joining us here from his home. At Fenway Park, as we did last year as well. Believe me, we don't need many excuses to come sit at the ballpark on a day like this. But John Henry is with us, and it's great to see you again.
Hi, boy. It's what a day.
Isn't this perfect? When you come to work on a day like this, do you look out your office window and say, I get to work here?
I do, but I wish I had a window like this in the office. This is just such an extraordinary view.
Don't you think that can be arranged? I mean, do you know people?
You know, we got
hookups here?
We keep making changes, and we've talked about actually putting our offices behind that Ford sign. What would you call that? The right field bleachers.
Yeah, behind the Ted Williams seat.
Right, and you know, building up above there so we could look out over the field and move our offices away, because this is sort of prime real estate where we are. We could have a club or lounge for season ticket holders there. But it hasn't happened yet.
When you're sitting at 35-15, are you in a position where you don't even want to change your socks when things are going this good?
It's surreal to look out at that, at the standings in left field and see that 11.5-game lead. What's really surreal is to see four teams in the East all with losing records.
And realistically, I mean, short of catastrophe or injury, it's not like your team has done something extraordinary. You've played very well. You've played very consistently, but maybe haven't even hit your stride offensively yet at this point.
Well, I think Kevin and a couple of others sort of picked up the slack. Dustin has been incredibly hot the last, what, I think he's up to 298 now. He's on basis, 395. So, we've had a couple of players been struggling offensively, but it's been made up for in other areas.
Hey, John, each season...
In fact, I looked at it yesterday. Over the last 3 weeks, we'd scored 5.8 runs a game. And so it does feel like we're not hitting on all cylinders offensively, but 6 runs a game, it's hard to lose when many games when you're scoring 6 runs a game.
I'd agree with that. Now, each season has its own challenges. I just want to go back to the very beginning of this, and I'm wondering if the season started this season, the 2007 season, began at the end of 2006, toward the end, when the Yankees came in and won 5 games. Was that a wake-up call for you? Did that change your philosophy at all? Or did that series change anything for the 2007 season for the Red Sox, approach-wise?
Well, it was more than the series. It was a lot more than the series. We knew all year long that we were lightweight with regard to depth. We couldn't afford a lot of injuries, and we'd been fortunate, I think, in at least the first half of the season. But by September 1st, we were in the mode that we had been in October of 2003, right after losing that 7th game in 2003. We were all very distraught in the front office and determined that we were going to do whatever it took 2004 to win, and we were able to go out and get Curt Schilling, Keith Foulke, and Theo did a great job of putting that team together. And we still almost didn't make it, but we went back in that mode again last September, falling out of the pennant race. It was the first time we'd had a September since we'd been in Boston in which we weren't playing meaningful games, and that's what you want to do. And we've been lucky. I think in 5 years we had pretty much almost every game had been for the first 4 years every game had been meaningful.
Well, I was going to use the word afford in a different context. Afford injuries. You couldn't afford to do certain things because of your injuries. Well, let's use the word afford the way most of us use it in terms of resources and finances. Did you find after that September of meaningless games, let's just be honest about it, that there were more resources available for the baseball operations staff to use? Is that an accurate way of looking at it?
No. Only from this perspective, that ratings dropped significantly in September, so it was easier for me to go to our partners and say, look, we can't afford to be in this position again, and to really collapse the way we collapsed. So we had a real economic, I think, incentive to spend more money. And I've always been sort of a spending hawk within the partnership, and we have, as you've seen over the last, this is our sixth year now, been willing to spend money. But this year, I think some people thought we went a little overboard in going after Matsuzaka, but we were determined to get somebody in the five spot in the lineup and to find a number one pitcher, and that's expensive these days.
We asked Jeremy Jacobs this question last week about, you know, what were his realistic expectations going into the Bruins season. I thought his expectations were loftier than what they maybe had the talent to justify. Given your offseason, what were your expectations going into this baseball season?
Well, as I said, we were determined that we were going to improve this team, both offensively and giving up runs. And so that was our expectation. I don't think we necessarily expected to do as well as we're doing.
That's what I was getting at. Have you at this point, and we're only 50 games in, has this team exceeded what you thought you might see out of it?
The thing that has impressed me the most about this team is that they find ways to win. And that's, you know, there's this thing called a Pythagorean, a win-loss record, which is based on the number of runs you score versus the runs that are scored against you. And the, in 2002, 2003, we were very poor when it came to winning games compared to the degree to which we were outscoring our opponents. But since Terry's been here, Tito, as you call him, over the last 4 years now, we have really exceeded our Pythagorean, and that is you have to give the manager credit for that, and you also have to have a bullpen that is good enough. And it, you know, we always focus on how poorly the bullpen's doing, but I don't think people focus enough that this is really an offensive game in this decade. It's a very much an offensive game, so bullpens are going to give up runs, and no one's. We were talking, Theo and I were talking last night about how you might acquire in our bullpen a number three guy. It's very expensive as far as the talent you would have to give up to find a solid, or a solid is the wrong word, but someone who perhaps can do as well as two guys in our bullpen have been doing. And for most teams, they're looking for one guy that can do that well. So this team knows how to win. At least thus far this year, it's still early in the season, but you've seen it in games, and we've been able to protect leads. The bullpen has done an incredible job.
And now you mentioned one of the guys I want to ask you about, or you alluded to him, in Okajima. We spent a lot of time talking about Daisuke and the posting fee, pretty well documented. What were your thoughts when you initially, way back when, heard about Okajima and the baseball operations folks said we need to bring him to Boston? What were your thoughts about him then?
They were often in the context of our discussions about Matsuzaka. So we were hopeful to get both of them, and we were also hopeful, perhaps, to get the third baseman who signed with Tampa. But I don't think anyone expected him to do as well as he's done, because he's been almost as, I guess he's been about as good as John Papelbon was last year in coming in as a rookie. So, but it was always within the context of trying to bring both of them here.
The context of Matsuzaka, obviously Matsuzaka, because of his talent and what he could bring to your club as a top of the rotation starter. With Okajima, were we missing the boat? Did you guys say, oh, we know he can be effective, and he just happens to be Japanese, and he could help the transition for Matsuzaka?
And he's a left-hander. There's a dearth of left-handed talent in the major leagues, and we face the Yankees when they're healthy, have only two right-handed hitters in a ball game against a right-handed pitcher. So a lefty, being a lefty, is a big part of it.
We were talking about ownership last week, in particular, you know, how much do you want your owners involved, and whether it's Bob Kraft with the Patriots or Jeremy Jacobs with the Bruins. You need to know the game for obvious reasons. You need to be a fan of the game for obvious reasons. How much are you involved in decisions, in player decisions, beyond the obvious financial commitment which you have to approve? How much are you involved in the other parts of that?
I'm not really involved in that. I'm involved in the financial aspect. I mean, but unfortunately, that's such a major part of baseball these days. It's almost every decision is a financial decision, but I'm not really involved in player decisions. That would be a mistake for me to be involved in that.
Other than the obvious fan part of it, when you guys were putting together the opportunity to acquire a pitcher like Daisuke Matsuzaka, and obviously there was a gigantic financial commitment, but beyond that, did you look at video as a fan? Did you say, man, look at what this guy's doing? I'm sure, Theo, you have access to information that I don't have and Michael doesn't have. Did you take advantage of that, and were you as excited about acquiring him as Theo seemed to be?
Well, I was obvious. As much as we bid, you could see that we were excited about acquiring him. I don't see the things they see. They were excited. I didn't see I just don't have the ability, the eye, to be able to see what they see in a player. So you're really we relied primarily on Craig Shipley, who was over in Japan and watching him pitch, seeing him pitch, scouting him. Same thing with Okajima. And it was really $100 million bet on Craig Shipley and Theo and baseball operations.
You know, I did something this morning. I do it every morning, John. I've been doing it since I was 9 or 10 years old. I picked up the Wall Street Journal.
Since you were 9?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Faithful reader of the Wall Street Journal. I just
Do you have any money left?
That's right. That's why I'm a talk show host, picking up the Wall Street Journal and taking advantage of the tips in there. But I rarely pick up the Wall Street Journal, but I saw it today. See this little tease here on the front page.
Oh, you were joking. You were joking.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get it.
Oh, man, I tell you. Outside Fenway, a losing streak for John Henry. Now, do you think this is an accurate portrayal of what's going on outside of Fenway Park with you?
Well, it's certainly a negative portrayal. I don't think it talks about any of the positives.
You wouldn't call it a losing streak, though. I mean, let's just start with
I would call it that. I would call it that. But we've been doing that for 25 years. For 25 years, we've had a lot of volatility. Talking about that company, most people refer to it as JWH. That company's had a lot of volatility over the last 25 years. In fact, he's a Yankee fan, Zuckerman. He wrote an article in 2004, pretty much the same article, but we're still going.
Because your point, and now correct me if I'm wrong here, and I've heard you say something, this is the sentiment I've heard you say for 3, 4, 5 years, pretty much the markets do change. Situations change,
exactly,
but your philosophy remains the same.
Right.
So your philosophy is not going to change despite what the Wall Street Journal calls a losing streak.
That's correct. There's this thing called discipline. We've always been volatile. We have lost 40% from time to time, I guess maybe a half dozen times over the last 25, 26 years now. But I think what people, if you just read the article casually, what people don't realize is that these kind of alternative investments are usually 5% of someone's portfolio. They're negatively correlated with the stock market. We do well when stocks don't do well. We don't do that well when they're very strong and there's lack of volatility. So we haven't done well for the last 3 years. But and I've already heard some people wondering, well, is this going to affect the Red Sox? And that was the genesis of the first article in 2004. Would we be able to sign Pedro? And I tried to tell them at the time the two are separate. But I guess in full disclosure, I should say that like most investors, I never have more than 5% of probably a few times in my life I've had as much as 10%. But in the last 3 years, I've never had more than 5% of my investment portfolio in those funds. I'm 90% invested in six-month treasury bills for most of my life. I've been a pretty conservative investor. So people shouldn't worry about whether or not the Red Sox are going to be affected by that slump, what they call a slump. And it is a slump. We've done abysmally, whatever the proper term
is.
That's
it, the last one, abysmally.
Abysmally over the last 3 years. But I don't think that – I don't want to predict what's going to happen in the future. You can't predict the future. But we've come back from worse declines.
How has this investment been for you, this one that we're sitting in right now?
Well, it's hard to think of an investment. You called it my home. That was such a nice thing to say, his home. It feels like home. But just like your home, I really don't think of my home as an investment. I don't think of this as an investment. I intend to do this as long as I'm able. So, but as you're asking from, have we done well?
You've certainly sunk a lot of money into this physical plant in the time you've been here. You've sunk a lot of money into payroll in the time you've been here. Have you gotten a return on your investment?
We've gotten a return, but it's very complicated because you amortize everything. But if you just look from a cash standpoint, I think we borrowed, let's say we borrowed X amount of dollars when we bought the team. We probably have the same debt on it at this point because as far as cash flow, pretty much every dollar that we've taken in, we've spent. We've spent now, I don't know, it's certainly over $100 million on the ballpark in making these changes. It's hard to believe that it's that much money to do what we've done. It's hard to believe if you change a restroom how much it costs these days in a ballpark. It's bad enough in a home, but in a ballpark it's ridiculous.
Especially if the restrooms are extremely outdated, as many of the restrooms in Fenway Park were before you took over here. I'm wondering, baseball clearly is not your only love when it comes to sports. You're into racing as well. Tell us why you decided to take that love to a next level and put your money behind it.
Yeah, it's been over. I think it's been overemphasized about how big of a race fan I am. I did go to the race on Sunday. It was on the way, sort of from Florida to here, and but it's not my greatest passion. We made this investment. We studied it for 3.5 years, and we made the investment because it's a way to generate revenues that aren't taxable in baseball. Baseball now takes is at a 50% tax rate, and the marginal rate is sort of a chimera, an illusion, but they might tell you it's 31%, but we pay on as if it was 48%. So that spurs us on to look to other directions, because if you invest, say, a dollar in Fenway Park and you make a dollar, on that dollar you make, trying to make your dollar spent back, you end up paying 50% of that into revenue sharing. So it makes it incredibly expensive to invest in your team, risky and expensive. So we're doing everything we can to develop revenue streams that baseball can't go after.
We called this your home, and it's the only baseball home any of us who grew up in New England have ever known. Every home has a lifespan. I mean, eventually, someday down the road, this one is not going to be able to continue to be improved. Do you foresee that day? Have you begun planning for that day in your long-range forecasts?
Our goal is when we leave here, hopefully due to just old age, that the next group of owners will look at Fenway and will say that, you know, the last thing we need is a new ballpark. If we're going to spend what seems to me to be an incredible sum of money to resurface this lower bowl so that the foundation of this of the structure will be solid and safe for the next 50 years. So it's 95 years old now. Will it last another 95 years? I think it might. And it's just a matter of you have to maintain a building.
Well, what does that mean when you say resurface the lower bowl? I mean, does it mean changing seats? I mean, what does that physically mean?
It means that, and we should have a discussion about the seats. It's an interesting thing to discuss. Well, it might be interesting for some.
I was going to say, I'm hoping what you meant was we're going to redo the seats.
There may be reasons not to overly redo them, which we can go into. But what we have to do is that we have to, and you can see right behind the home dugout, see that white spot?
Yep.
That's sort of like, what is it, six rows that are white underneath?
Right.
That's what you might call, I don't know what you exactly call it. You can see in the first two rows here in the infield as well. That's all new surface. And we're going to have to do that throughout here. Why are we going to have to rip up all this concrete? Because, or at least repair it? Because water can leak through the cracks, and that can affect the foundation. And if we don't do that, this building would have a limited lifespan of, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 years.
Hearing you talk about some of the financial challenges that you have, and they're not financial challenges of a cash-strapped team. It's actually the opposite, challenges of holding all the money that you are creative enough to come up with. But wouldn't it be easier for your sport to have, I don't know if it's a salary cap or some type of structure where everybody is on an equal plane, yet you keep the money that you come up with and they keep the money that they come up with?
Well, salary caps have worked in other sports. The owners in this sport have found it easier. Small markets and small revenue teams have found it easier just to take from the big revenue teams than to try to convince the players that a salary cap being partners with the players would be advantageous for the sport.
But, you know, then you think of it, you wouldn't have a team with a $60 million payroll.
Right.
You'd have a salary cap floor and a ceiling, and then it's better for everybody. It's better for
it's
the
better
owners,
for
and
everybody.
It's better for the players.
Absolutely. If you could convince the powers
I'm
of
the gonna
be.
I'm
going to
try.
I'm in those meetings, and I haven't been able to convince anyone.
See, I'm in the opposite. I don't like salary caps. I don't think salary cap in hockey has been a good thing.
Why is that?
Well, I think that if in the NBA, if I use that as an example, if you make a mistake, it's hard to dig yourself out from under it. If you've made a huge error.
But that's a restrictive cap.
I understand.
I mean, it's not the cap that's causing the problem. It's the restrictions on the cap.
And in hockey, I think that Jeremy Jacobs would spend more money if he could. And I'll use that as my local example. I think if he could go out and be convinced that goaltender X at $8 million a year would make the difference, I think he'd go spend it, but he's not allowed to. I think that, you know, there are teams in baseball who simply can't spend what you spend, what the Yankees spend, what the Dodgers, Cubs may spend. But I think there are teams who, in your case, I wouldn't want to see that you had to spend $40 million less than what you're spending. I like the product you're putting out on the field now.
So do I.
And with a salary cap, I wouldn't have that same product, I don't think.
Well, the great thing about not having a salary cap is it creates a lot of incentive to create revenue and grow revenue. And so you're right. I mean, there are pluses and minuses to any system. If you want parity, this is a very painful way to gain it. If you take this year, they're going to take $70 million off our bottom line. That's painful. And I know I sound like I'm complaining. our way of dealing with it, just try to develop as many revenues outside of baseball as we can.
Could you just clarify that? If they take $70 million off your bottom line, how do they come up with that number? They're taking $70 million because what happens?
They're essentially transferring 48% of all local revenue to revenue sharing or to a pool, and then they redistribute it out 1/30th to each team. So net-net, we end up paying about, 22% of our local revenues in tax. And that amounts to about $70 million this year. It might be higher than 22%, but our bill, I just saw it last week, for this year will be $70 million, and that's off your bottom line. That's what's so painful is, so it's painful.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.